Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Monday, March 19th, 2018 edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. As always, I am your host, Robert Vallejos, and this week I'm joined by a rather eclectic panel. I got the longtime MMA Torch contributor, Sean Annis, with me. Sean, how's it going today?
It's going very well, sir. Thank you. Glad to be here.
That's great. Glad to get you back on. And we have an occasional caller, sometime contributor. Might be making the next Thriller as we speak. I do not know, but we got Rick Monsey on the line. Rick, how's it going?
Good. How are you guys doing today?
It is a perfect day to talk about MMA and pro wrestling. What do you think?
Absolutely.
All right, guys, let's get to it. But before I do that, let me give you a few options to get in touch with the show. Go ahead and give us a call, 515-605-9345, and then simply just press 1. To let me know to bring you on. If calling isn't the way to go, I would suggest send an email. MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALivecast@gmail.com. I cannot stress that enough, folks. I really want to get the email beefed up here in the next couple of weeks. So if you want to send something, you got a question, you got a comment, have a criticism, have a long form question to ask, go ahead and send that our way. And we will get that answer for you on the air, or at least respond to you in email form if it can't be answered on the air in some ways. Also, you can always get to us at Twitter anytime, at MMA Torch, simple, at MMA Torch. Get to us on Twitter at any time, send us a direct message, send us a tweet, and we will certainly get back to you. All right, guys, we had ourselves maybe the most underwhelming card in a really long time, not from a quality perspective, but from a build perspective. If you didn't know, if you weren't on the websites, you would never know that the UFC held an event this weekend. But it was the UFC Fight Night from London with a pretty significant result in the main event in the heavyweight division. You had Alexander Volkov taking out Fabricio Werdum, KO due to punches at 138 of the fourth round. Bit of a shocker here. You know, last week on the show, I felt like we were really picking Werdum as this was just another holdover fight as he sticks at the top of the division, but Alexander Volkov obviously had other plans for that. Sean, I'll start with you. What are you seeing in the future in the near future for Volkov after pulling this off?
You got to think he's thrust directly into the title picture. I mean, I don't know if he'll get the next shot or not. You know, with Stipe Miocic after the fight with Cormier. You know, I think it remains to be seen if Cormier would have won that fight, if he would move up to heavyweight or if he would actually retire. But Volkov, I think he's got to be right around the top. I mean, he came in, he got a win over Roy Nelson, got a win over Stefan Struve, and now got a win over Fabricio Werdum. I mean, he's got to be right there towards the top. You know, it doesn't take much in the heavyweight division. And this guy is a relative baby at 29 years old. You know, he's 6'7". He's a huge dude. I think they're sitting on a really could be a perennial contender right now with Volkov. So I think they're going to stick him in there with, you know, if not a title shot, then at least with one of your heavy hitters there, whether it's Ngannou or whether it's Derek Lewis or any of those guys. You know, I think we're looking top five, top seven, at least for Volkov in his next fight.
Yeah, and I love the Stipe Cormier fight. I'm not going to deny that and change my opinion on it midstream. But now we are starting to see the effect of what those type of fights do to a division, in that every week it seems like we have a good heavyweight that emerges, but then we all know that they're going to be on a bit of a treadmill for a minute. And I think with heavyweight, that's particularly noticeable because that hasn't been the case in heavyweight, because for so long it's been a living, breathing body on a two-fight winning streak and seemingly get a title shot and win the title in the heavyweight division. And now they actually have to wait their turn, which might actually bring some clarity to the division for a change. First time in a long time that we would experience such a thing. Rick, what do you think overall of Verdun's performance? Is he finally on the decline? I mean, he's only like 40. Is he finally going to start declining here?
I think that he is kind of settling into his gatekeeper role, and I'm sad to say that, but I think he should next fight another Russian heavyweight, Oleksiy Oleinik. Is that how you say his name? I think in many ways, watching these two grapplers go at it is a treat for most hardcore fans, even though that wouldn't be the most marketable opponent. But unless they both decided to stand, and that's going to be kind of sloppy. But for Doom, I don't think is really the ideal gatekeeper. He's almost too dangerous to feed any rising heavyweight stars that are on the horizon. But if he loses a couple more fights, I could honestly see him for the money jumping over to Bellator and ruling the heavyweight world. I think his time as a possible champion is coming to a close.
Yeah, if he was in that Bellator tournament, I would think he would be a big-time favorite in that world, because as much as he's on the decline, he's still a very high-level fighter and a guy that we've seen recently over the lower-level fighters, he can absolutely eat them alive. Let's move on to the co-main event.
Hey, don't rule it out yet. He may still go to that tournament and win as an ultimate. So you know that may be my pick now.
Well, you bring that up, Sean, and I was just thinking about it. I'm so disappointed that like everything in the tournament has held course so far. Like the whole reason I was looking forward to the tournament was for like the chaos of the whole situation, and none of that has played out at all. I mean, maybe it'll be like Fabricio Werdum versus Daniel Cormier in the final. I mean, that there's some history there of Cormier stepping at the last minute. Could happen. Doubt it will. Let's talk about the co-main event real quick, guys. In the light heavyweight division, we had Jan Błachowicz getting the win over Jimmy Manoa. Tough loss for Manoa, as we talked about before. A guy who was really on his way and has hit two big stumbling blocks here to get to the top of that division. Is the bubble going to burst now for Manoa, Sean?
In as much as it was ever there, I mean, I don't know. Manoa, I think, thought he was closer to the top of the division than he actually was. You know, he's got a nice highlight reel. I think he's going to be around for, you know, indefinitely until he decides not to be around anymore, because he's a fun guy to watch. He's a good, you know, a good guy to open a card with, or throw on a co-main event on a fight pass card, for example, here. But, you know, he's an action fighter and he's, you know, he's reliable for a good fight. So those kind of guys tend to stick. Regardless of, you know, win loss, at least to a certain extent. You know, it's not like he's on the decline or anything like that, or it doesn't seem like it. I think he can handle the occasional loss here and there, especially in a fight like this that was a lot of fun to watch.
Rick, on the other side of the coin, what's the upside for Błachowicz?
I think Błachowicz can go and fight maybe a Corey Anderson, or maybe if he wants to fight OSP or something like that, or even Latifi. I don't think he's, you know, just because he beat the proverbial number four, or number five, whatever Jimmy Manoa seems to be in these rating charts. I don't think he goes from Jimmy Manoa and then fights a Glover or, you know, Alexander Gustafsson or anything like that. I think he's just kind of swimming around the top of the top 10.
Yeah, and does he seem to be one of the guys that if we ever get this invasion into 205, I feel like he would be so far on the outside for a guy that's, you know, a decent fighter who seems to be on the way. He would totally get pushed aside if guys like Rockhold and Weidman ever actually came into the division. He's a guy that would greatly suffer from their inclusion within the 205 division. Guys, what else?
Absolutely. And he's...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, he's not really the guys you just mentioned, too. They're more marketable, even if they're not going to necessarily be the biggest guys at 205, but he doesn't scream money to me. I mean, even though he's been winning fights and he looked impressive in this last one, if I was UFC, I would be hesitant to put my promotional bandwagon behind him, you know, and just fire the rockets.
And we'll kind of close out talking about this fight card with one simple question. Did anything else stand out from this entire night? And I'll start with Sean and then follow him up there, Rick.
Nothing super specific. I mean, Paul Craig had that nice submission at 4:59 in the third round. That was kind of fun. In a fight that he was losing, there were some fun stoppages on the undercard. Other than that, I wouldn't say there's anything that we can really take away from this card. You know, Leon Edwards is campaigning for Darren Till now. I didn't really see anything in that fight that made me think that he was going to have anything for Till, or that he was marketable enough to get in there with Till, or a known entity or something like that. So I don't know that we got anything really newsworthy other than, you know, Volkov getting that win over Werdum here on this card.
Rick?
Yeah, and Sean, like you mentioned, the 4:59 mark submission, and then they had a TKO, the Leon Edwards one.
That's
so
right.
There's two third round, 4:59 finishes, which I think has to be a record somewhere. But besides that, I think, Robert, you've mentioned this before. I just enjoy the UFC Fight Pass, the pacing of the shows. They just, like, speed right through all the fights. So that's the one thing I do like about either the preliminary card or the main card. But as far as the names and the results and anything like that, nothing really stood out to me beyond, you know, and any other fight card, either on UFC or Access TV.
And we're going to have a little bit of a break from the UFC here in the next couple of weeks. We don't have anything to UFC 223, which to me seems like the most ominous thing ever, that the Khabib-Tony fight, we have to wait a couple of weeks to get to. And it's like, oh, God. So all we're going to do as MMA fans for the next little while is just stress about the fact that that fight might not happen. Are you guys okay with this little layoff and this suddenly, after the eight-week stretch of UFC events every week, Rick, are you okay with getting this breather right now in April?
Absolutely. I mean, this next weekend or two, like, for me, it's just like, get the personal life going as far as, like, having stuff to do your weekends. Make sure your significant other, if they have a party they want to go to, get that time in now. Because by the time that pay-per-view comes around, the next day is WrestleMania. So if you start to watch the UFC card from top to bottom, you're going to be in your house watching television for, like, 7 hours. And then the next day, WrestleMania will just be as long as ever. And so that's a full weekend, like 14 hours. That's like a full-time or, you know, part-time job, just sitting at your house watching television. And then for any boxing fans, the weekend before we got the Anthony Joshua fight. So enjoy this weekend, everybody.
it's like that last weekend in August before the NFL season starts, and suddenly all the yard work has to be done before the weekends are totally owned by football. But yeah, that's going to be – I don't like having them do – last year they didn't even do a card in WrestleMania weekend, which I get if you're not going to do a television card, because I think the interest would be relatively low, even though they claim they have no crossover audience. I think them doing that card on the 7th and a fairly significant card and running New York, which has got a – or, you know, that's got to be some sort of passive-aggressive stab at Vince doing that on their weekend. That's gonna be a hectic weekend. Personally, I have a little league game to coach and my daughter's birthday the next day. So if you guys anyone see the movie Multiplicity, I'm gonna have to get a clone of myself to do all the other stuff, so I can just watch all the combat sports for the weekend.
Exactly.
Sean, are you okay with this this MMA reprieve that we're about to get?
I'm more than okay. I think they need it. I mean, there's too much out there at this point. You know, when you have a Fight Pass card that gets, I mean, like you said it earlier, if you don't have Fight Pass, if you're not following every little thing that's going on, you don't even know this card exists. You know, so I think it's good to not have any fluff for the next couple of weeks so they can really pump up this card. This is good. I mean, this has the potential to be a huge card, at least from a fight quality perspective. You know, they've got a great poster for it, which is no small thing, honestly. And I know that's Rick's thing too. So,
oh yeah.
You know, it's a significant card coming up, and the more they can focus their energy on promoting that card rather than, you know, putting whatever half effort they do into these smaller cards, is going to be to their benefit, and I think to the benefit of the viewing public as well. So. I think it's almost, I mean, I wish they would do it more often, just take more weekends off. You know, if you're going to run secondary events, you know, do it on a different night or something like that, make it a different crew, make it feel different. Just so that, you know, cause the thing is, if you tune in any Saturday night and you've got fights on, then how do you differentiate between what matters and what doesn't? I mean, it sends a message that kind of everything is the same, but you know, that's the kind of that's the horse that we've been beating for years. So I won't go quite all the way down that road, but in a nutshell, yes, it's a good thing they're taking a couple of weeks off here.
Rick, I need your expert opinion on the poster. I'll say it's good, but I'm not a credentialed poster criticizer. How is the poster?
It's by far their best poster of the year. That's incredible. It's like a movie poster. I'm actually heartbroken because there's I'm going to get – this is a order-at-home pay-per-view for me by far. The people who we usually go to Big Wang, so watch the pay-per-view, I don't want any of that distraction. I don't want to sit there and focus. And now I'm not going to have the ability to get the poster at Big Wang, so I actually have to buy it. But that's what I'm going to do because it's such a good poster. I also want to say, to add to the conversation, NXT is going to be on the same day, NXT TakeOver, as that pay-per-view. And, you know, usually UFC is, like you were saying, Sean, they don't – and Robert, they don't have these events on this weekend. So I know that there is a little bit of cross-promotion, pollination, rather. And so that's going to be a big deal. I mean, a couple eyes will be averted because NXT has been putting out a good product lately. And some people who aren't as crazy about this fight card, even though I think that's impossible, top to bottom, the card's incredible. You know, some people might just decide to watch NXT live.
Yeah, and I would look back to the summer of 2016 at UFC 202. I've referenced this before. You had a great takeover card in Brooklyn. Then you had the historic UFC 202 card, and then you had SummerSlam the next day. And I remember by that Monday, I had nothing left for combat sports. It was a bit much. I will say, though, if you're a fan that's only really interested in the main event and you're willing to pay for a pay-per-view and not watch, you know, every fight, more than likely, before the good stuff really got started on UFC 223, the NXT would probably be finished. But what's a bummer is, okay, you can watch the NXT on demand, but if you're going to be on social media, pro wrestling and MMA social media has so much cross-pollination that you're going to get spoiled on something. So you do. It seems like you do have to make a choice unless you're going to go into total blackout. Rick?
Yeah, I mean, plus this card, in all probability, the NXT card, I mean, you're going to have Cien Almas and Aleister Black, plus I can't imagine they're not going to do Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano, which is going to be insane. So it's going to be some good stuff.
Yeah, I'm definitely, that'll be the highlight of the weekend, I think, for me at least, unless this UFC card blows it away. Rick, with all this time off, it's a good time, I think, to get caught up on maybe binge watching your favorite show. Do you like, Rick, to kick back with a bottle of wine and just put on Netflix, put on the WWE Network, and just watch something that you haven't seen in a while and
Absolutely.
Just deep dive into it? I do too. The problem is I never.
Well, especially now that Thunder.
Yes, that's what I was thinking of in my head, but I couldn't think of what the show was that you would be into. But Thunder is on the network, so if you were going to watch Thunder, Rick, would you snuggle up with a good bottle of wine that fit your taste perfectly?
Absolutely, I did it at the time, and I'll do it again.
All right. Well, you know what? If you're going to do that, I would suggest that you go with Wink. That's WINC. What Wink does is it makes it easy to discover great wine. Because Wink's wine experts select wine matched to your taste, personalized just for you, and they're shipped right to your door. Also, the bottles start at just $13. That's a great deal. There's nothing like coming home to a bottle of delicious Wink wine selected just for you. It really is the best day of your month. Not as good as Thunder was every Thursday for Rick back in the day, but the best day in the 2000s for sure, the 20-10s or whatever you want to call these. All you got to do is fill out Wink's palate profile quiz and answer simple questions. You know, the average store clerk probably wouldn't think to ask you or wouldn't take your suggestion and translate it into a great selection for you. Questions like, how do you take your coffee or how do you feel about blueberries? Then Wink, what they do is they get wines and they send them to you curated based on your taste. So the more personalized you get with them, the more they get to know you and the better they'll be able to send that to you. Each month there's delicious new wines like the insanely popular Summer Water Rose. There are no membership fees. You can skip any month and you can cancel at any time. I mean, this has much more flexibility than UFC Fight Pass or the WWE Network. Shipping is absolutely covered. And if you don't like a bottle that they send you, you can send it back. No questions asked. They'll send you a bottle you will absolutely love. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/PWTorch and get $20 off your first shipment. That's triwink.com/PWTorch for $20 off. trywink.com/PWTorch. Okay, guys, let's go to our first break, and then we'll take a caller or two on the other side.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about like the press conferences and stuff like that. They just, someone tells them like, all right, now it's your turn to go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Rick, are you going to come out of hiding with all these Thunder episodes being presented on the network? Like, are we going to hear from you for the next 2 or 3 weeks?
Oh, I'm so excited. I am a little disappointed that they don't have the 2000s up there yet, because that's when they really gave up and it became incredibly entertaining. Like, you know, 98, 99, towards the end of 99, that's when Ric Flair was going insane and they were having him in the mental institution. That's the good stuff. If you haven't seen that, you don't know where you've been missing.
I just picture – I haven't seen a lot of Thunder, but I picture that like 2000 WCW is considered the worst major wrestling promotion of all time, and Thunder is considered the worst show that they produce. So that's like the Venn diagram of crap, pretty much is what you're saying. So I bet you it's great. But, hey, I can see why they're holding that back for the big launch.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Disco Inferno, he's great. You know, you got all the Norman Smiley. He's like a mainstay. Hacksaw Jim Duggan when he was a janitor.
Oh, man.
You know, when you think about how much bad wrestling there's been over the years, and that takes the cake of all of it. That says something right there.
And that happened during the golden era of wrestling.
Parker sounding like he was a rapper.
Think about that. This is when
absolutely.
Wrestling was at its hottest, and that show came out.
Right.
All right.
Oh, you guys, you should watch too. The opening credits to the 99 episodes is hilariously bad. It's just like, I can't believe it passed through production. Someone's like, yeah, that's good. Roll it.
Well, when Kevin Nash is your boss, I don't know what else you can really expect. Guys, let's go to our first caller of the day. It looks like it's Ryan in Maryland. Ryan, what do you got for us today?
Okay. First question I got for you is, I know that this has happened in, like, the smaller mixed martial arts leagues. Do you think they'll ever be, like, tag team champions in either, like, Bellator or UFC, like, say, 5 years, 10 years down the road?
I would instinctively say no, but I'm sure anything can happen. When you do watch that tag team MMA, it's interesting for a minute, and then it gets a little boring. If you ask me, I do like on some of them I've seen where they actually switch partners at a mandatory time, and that's kind of interesting. I don't know that it would ever be fully sanctionable in a major American promotion, and I don't know if it would ever be that exciting off of like a one-off novelty if one of the major promotions was putting it on. What do you think, Sean?
Yeah, I think, like you said, it's a more interesting idea on paper than it is in reality. And I've seen a couple of the highlights from the, I think it was a Russian promotion that did it. That being said, you know, would it surprise me if Bellator added another gimmick to its quiver? No, not especially. But I doubt that it happens.
Sean, are you down for the Rock and Roll Express? I mean, excuse me, Rick, are you down for the Rock and Roll Express making their debut in Bellator?
Yeah, that would be great. That'd be awesome. I don't think Bellator, you know, believe it or not, I don't think Bellator would really consider this. This would have been a World Series of Fighting thing. Like, I could definitely see NBC Sports going up to World Series of Fighting before, you know, they changed their name and lost all their fighters and being like, listen, what do you guys think about tag teams? And then be like, oh, okay, you know.
maybe the IFL back in the day too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other thing I've always wanted to ponder is some sort of MMA mixed double. So I guess in pro wrestling you call it a mixed tag where you have a man and a woman on one side, and if a defeat happens at any time, there's no cross gender wrestling here. You would say Ronda and Brock were on the same team. Ronda would fight, you know, Holly Holm for a round, and then that round would end, and then Brock would like fight, I guess, Travis Brown in this weirdly odd universe that I'm creating, and that would happen. I would love to see mixed doubles in MMA. That's something I'm definitely campaigning for. I haven't got as far to campaign for like a non-sanctioned street fight in MMA. I don't think that'll ever happen, but I would hold my hopes out for weapons in MMA. Rick, what else do you got for us?
Yeah. My second question is, I don't know if this has ever happened. I know it hasn't happened in the American Federation. I know they've even done Survivor Series matches overseas, according to Boss Rutan. Has there ever been like a triple threat match anywhere in the world with mixed martial arts?
Not that I know of, but so I've been confused on some of those tag team ones that I've seen. Do you guys recall any like multi-person matches within MMA?
No,
I've seen a handicapped one.
A handicap?
There was one online. You can find it. You can find it on YouTube. It's it's in, I don't think it was the United States, but there was these guys, and it was like cosplay mixed with MMA, where these guys were dressed as Batman and Robin, and they were fighting Spider-Man. And there was an audience. Like, there was actually people watching this. You can find it online. I've seen it a couple times. It's made many, like, awful MMA top 10 lists on YouTube.
There was, I think it was Front Row Brian a couple of years ago for the Royal Rumble, suggested they do a shoot Royal Rumble with, like, judo and jiu-jitsu players in an octagon and have them all throwing each other out. I would absolutely pay to watch what legitimate, like, what type of fighter would win in a shoot Royal Rumble. I would pay an ungodly amount of money for that on pay-per-view. Rick, what else you got? Excuse me, Ryan, what else do you got for us?
Yeah, another question I got for you is, when I went to a Bellator show, they were giving away Randy Couture bobblehead merchandise. Looks like some other types of giveaways they've done at mixed martial arts fans to send them home happy.
Well, Bellator has like a whole line of bobbleheads. I think they've got Kimbo Slice. They've got Hoist Gracie. They've got like a couple of Fedor ones. Rick, are you aware of any really cool giveaways that MMA promotions generally do at their live events?
Yeah, I was at the weigh-ins for when Anderson Silva fought Chris Weidman the second time, and that was a Ronda Rousey on Misha tape pay-per-view. And during the weigh-ins, they were giving away like inflatable balloons that you blow up, and then they said UFC and the pay-per-view number on, and you just wave them in the crowd so that that when they do the crowd shot, it looks really active. And, you know, it's not a bobblehead, but it's still kind of cool. We swiped a couple of those. And I think, yeah, that's basically it, though. Just little stuff.
I know when they do different remotes, it's a lot of, like, sponsorship-related material. There for a while, like, I had a whole collection of really weird Bud Light UFC apparel that I guess I was the Venn diagram for some people on those two interests coming together, where there was just a lot of like UFC Bud Light related necklaces and watches and flashlights and that sort of thing. But nothing too exciting. The UFC is strangely very unfan friendly for being such a top tier promotion. Doing something like a fun, like a bobblehead really seems to fit Bellator. UFC seems to cater in their live events, at least to the quote-unquote upscale audience, I would say, a little more, which they're not – they don't need to give away freebies like that. I mean, these are guys that are comped casino tickets and such. So I think the fun stuff that guys like us would be interested in isn't so much of a thing at UFC events. You got anything to add to that, Sean?
No, I think you guys pretty much covered it.
All right, Rick, what else we got? Excuse me, Ryan, I keep saying your name wrong incorrectly. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, final question for you is on Ronda Rousey. What weight do you think she's butting at in WWE? I know, like when she did her swimsuit picture, she was about 150. You think she weighs any more than that, or you think she's lighter than like a balling weight that she did when she did like Sports Illustrated?
She seems, I mean, from the way she looks in a leather jacket and pants, I would say she seems like more of her natural walk around weight, which I'm not sure exactly what that would be, in like maybe the 160s, 150 range. She doesn't look, obviously she's not in weight cut mode and she's not in that same type of training mode. But if you got to remember, even her fight with Amanda Nunes, Ramona Shelburne, who was the only one who could report on her at the time, was noting how she had only had to cut about 10 pounds for that fight because she was carrying a decent amount of muscle mass, but it was very lean. And when she got to that weigh-in, she actually looked really great. I don't know. I couldn't really give an educated guess on her weight. What do you think, Sean?
Yeah, I wouldn't know any better than you would. I think you gave that as much analysis as I could give, and probably more.
Rick, what would you say that the fighting weight right now is for Ronda?
Well, I like to think that after she got beat up by Amanda Nunes, she was about to hit 200 from just ice cream weight, from just sitting there being depressed and hiding sheltered in her house. And then she just shed it all once she realized she's done with fighting and going to WWE. As far as what her weight is now, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a hard one to really handicap. It's something I think about. I've never really thought about it with a female wrestler before, but I often think about in male wrestlers, if randomly they had weight classes that came up on one Monday Night Raw, suddenly we're all going to have shoot weight classes. I'd always be intrigued to see how much everybody actually weighs, because the look of somebody doesn't always indicate how much they weigh. And we know that from watching a ton of MMA, and you get weird shaped guys in weird weight classes. Ronda looks, I mean, I'm trying to say this without being offensive. Ronda looks like she is healthy. I do not mean to call her chunky or chubby in any way. She looks like a good-looking, normal, healthy athlete would look, who doesn't have to cut weight. So I would say, you know, maybe 10 to 20 above what she would normally be in fighting shape. And, you don't want to be too heavy, because you want to be able to move in pro wrestling, but you need a little bit of meat on you to be able to take bumps, so it wouldn't be too advantageous to just completely lean out. I don't think that would help her at all. Ryan, can you send us an email to our account, MMA Livecast? Just send an email, just say hi, or just say your name is Ryan. I really want your email address. Could you go ahead and do that?
I don't really have a good email address, but you have me on Twitter as Chicky Singer.
Okay, well, you know what? Just send... make some kind of contact on the MMA Torch Twitter.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Ryan. We'll talk to you next week. See you later, man.
Thank you.
All right. Ryan drops off, but you could still get in. 515-605-9345. Yeah, very delicate trying to... It's always weird. I think even when you're talking, even in MMA... when you're talking about a female fighter, you go, yeah, she really needs to lose weight, or she really needs to cut weight, or she looks better that she's gained weight. I always feel like that could go down a real slippery slope, and you try to talk about that as diplomatic as possible. Let's go to another break, guys, and when we come back on the other side, let's talk about a big change that happened in the WWE over the week and what it could mean in the UFC if similar parameters were presented.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch Livecast is scheduled, or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page, or download the show, or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's pwtorchlivecast.com for the latest shows, and also catch up on shows you missed at pwtorchlivecast.com.
Over this past week, the biggest story in professional wrestling was that the WWE had to change the name of a scheduled match. Last week on Monday Night Raw, shortly after this show wrapped up, the WWE announced with all this fanfare and all this promotion that there would be the Fabulous Moolah Memorial Battle Royal, basically the female equivalent of the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. This caused an immediate backlash in the online community. Fabulous Moolah, for lack of a better term, has a just awful reputation or sordid history that has really come to light in the last 10 or 15 years, where she did some awful things and was really the antithesis of a pioneer of women's wrestling, which was how she was presented with the promotional package for the WWE. It took a couple of days, but eventually they caved to corporate pressure, which is usually the way things happen in the world. usually a sponsor gets involved. We've seen this, you know, with Donald Sterling. You see it with some of the stuff going on with the NRA. If a corporate sponsor gets notified of something that their consumers might not be happy with their brand being associated with something, that's when things generally seem to change. And it did change, and it seems Snickers is the one that facilitated this change. Before we talk about how this relates to MMA, I just want to get you guys' take on the situation as a whole. Rick, what do you think about how this whole thing started and how it concluded?
I think it's the right move. I think that, like Bruce Mitchell said on his recent podcast, I was surprised that the WWE and, more importantly, the McMahon family bent to the pressure of by Snickers and the fans. I obviously don't think they would have done anything if it was just a Twitter backlash, but the fact that Snickers was saying something about it and the fact that the environment we're in currently, you know, with social media and just with every movement that's going on, it's probably the smart move for everybody. And it's something that now the WWE doesn't have to have come back at them every year. And just, you know, they named it, everybody fought back on that. Clean wash. Now get rid of it. It just kind of also shows the psyche of the WWE and their unwillingness to change the history they've written for themselves.
Yeah, I looked at it as a game of mental chicken with their audience to see, you know, how far can we get away with and what will be called out on it. But I think maybe they were a little shocked that it actually went to the level of sponsorship. And we always hear in this sanitized WWE that we have now that everything's all about the sponsors. And apparently that seems to be the case. We now have evidence that that is the case, that sponsors are very much in control of what goes on, you know, on the television. Sean, what were your overall impressions of this situation?
Yeah, I think you pretty much nailed it there. I had similar thoughts as to, you know, how it's possible to get them to change something that's distasteful. And, you know, for those that are listening, if you don't know what we're talking about, you can check out what Bruce Mitchell said. You can also check out there's an article from David Bixenspan on Deadspin that he wrote about this. But yeah, it's notable that, you know, how many times have people had all these thoughts and had all this negative feedback about these distasteful things that they've done, and nothing has happened, or they've gotten very little to meaningless responses. And here we are, you know, it took like 4 or 5 days before they changed the name of this Battle Royal. I think it's meaningful in that I wonder if the Ultimate Warrior thing will be the next one to go. And I have to think that's a pretty distinct possibility at this point, but time will tell.
Yeah, the Warrior one is interesting, and for information on that, dig out Wade Keller's column from about 3 years ago when they started that, and he really lays out many of the things that the Ultimate Warrior is documented to have said. You know, heck, you can go on YouTube and find a lot of the stuff that the Ultimate Warrior has said, and it's really weird that they're presenting him as this, you know, paragon of virtue and perseverance and all this stuff. It's just weird. With the Warrior, it actually feels more just like a marketing ploy, because the Warrior looks cool and has, you could sell cool face masks and face paint. Moolah, there's nothing to market about Moolah. That was just ridiculous. But I wanted to bring this conversation into the MMA world. First, I wanted to, is there a single cause that you think the MMA world would unite around and get a major promotion to change? Does that type of cause exist, Sean?
I mean, it probably does. You know, at least there are worthy causes. I mean, you know, there's the whole Russian oligarch thing. I make it a point not to remember the guy's name, but and I can never pronounce it if I do remember it. But you know, he's associated with several fighters, Fabricio Verdum included. You know, you've got to think that is something that people could get behind and at least make sponsors aware of. My question would be: is there any sponsor that has enough play with the UFC, and is there any, you know, will Dana White not be able to spin it in a way or downplay it in a way that they would just ignore the backlash? I mean, we've seen that happen before too, you know, with the whole Reebok debacle when that first thing started. I mean, obviously that's not a human rights thing or anything like that, but I mean, just the huge backlash was with those uniforms when they first came out, and they just kind of downplayed it, and it kind of went away. You know, yeah, I think there's definitely issues to get behind there. The question is, will some kind of mobilization even have the desired effect?
Well, and it's funny when you think about who's involved with the UFC, you generally think of apparel companies, and apparel companies have their hands in a lot of shady stuff globally as well. So that would be an interesting dynamic. And that was where I was getting with this, with the Chechen dictator. Kadyrov, I believe is how you say his last name, but when you say his first name together, I can never get it right. It's like Ramzan Kadyrov, I believe.
That's just right.
I can't put the two together. I can say the Chechen dictator, and I can sound like I'm a really smart newsman from like the 1990s. But other than that, yeah, I can't do that. I don't know if enough MMA fans care about that issue so much as they want to see it, because it's not like Kadyrov. Well, he is obviously being glorified in a monetary way on the UFC, even on this card this past weekend, with Werdum wearing the shirt of his camp. The UFC is not feeding you this bill of goods that Kadyrov is this humanitarian, and they're not creating like the Kadyrov humanitarian tournament or something. That would be, I guess, right, a similar equivalent. Rick, where do you come out on all of this with MMA fans being able to affect any type of change through sponsorship in MMA?
I mean, sure, if people feel strongly about liking Werdum's association with the Kadyrov, they should voice it. But I'm just curious as to what the Twitter activism can lead to. It's one thing if a fan reaction causes a controversial to be taken off being named for a match, like the Mae Young thing, but I think it's another thing entirely to get somebody fired because they're associated with a controversial person on a business sense. It's kind of a gray area, but that being said, I think Werdum needs to take a serious look at the risk he's potentially taking with the relationship he has with the Chechen Republic leader, and it's a tough gray area. Like I said, I just don't quite know. And Moolah, not Mae Young, sorry. But it is I just don't know where the social media uprising would do. Do we want to see Werdum fired for this, or an apology, or, you know, where do we go?
Yeah, it's hard because I think the damage has kind of already been done, because those business deals are already in place and there's already those agreements that have gone on, and people from Jackson's MMA have gone over and hung out with Kadyrov. And I think that's just the example that's close enough in MMA. I just wonder as a whole. I don't think MMA fans are united about anything in general. So I don't think there's one thing that they would feel so strongly about. And that's why I still don't see how this could quite translate over to MMA. The only way that it was is just the like or dislike of a fighter, which I think in that way you probably have a little more say in MMA. No matter what happens, unless people just stop coming to pro wrestling arenas, Roman Reigns is going to get his push. Cheer, boo, whatever. The ratings go down, it'll be rationalized to something else. The one way where the UFC is still a meritocracy, it's not a meritocracy based on your fighting, but you can still say it's a meritocracy based on your business indicators. So I could see if someone, and Werdum's probably not the right guy in that situation, but if it was an up-and-coming fighter that people cared strongly about, that was being pushed in a heavy way by the UFC, and then there was a backlash where people just stopped buying pay-per-views that fighter was on, that could be it. I don't think the Twitter activism, or even to use the derogative slacktivism, for lack of a better term, really has that much relevance in the world of the UFC. It's just interesting that that's one area where I think those two worlds are completely different. Let's move on from a Chechen dictator to a slightly more redeemable person in Floyd Mayweather, who is making a ton of noise about training for MMA. See, I wanted to change that. Like, let's go on a brighter topic. And okay, we're talking about Floyd Mayweather, so it's not exactly a beacon of morality over here. But I wouldn't put him in Kadyrov's level just yet. But Mayweather making some serious noise about MMA training, and even some rumors swirling around today that he's actually going to apply for an MMA license. Is this real or fake, Sean?
This is one of those things where I'll believe it when I see it. My initial thought is that it's fake, but then at the same time, I mean, what does he have to gain by saying this if it's not real? I mean, the answer being keeping his name in the headlines. But then again, why does he need to do that if he's retired? So it's a mixed it's a mixed answer for me, but I don't necessarily believe that I'm going to see Floyd Mayweather in MMA until I see something. And especially, I don't know if you guys saw the claim that his wrestling is a 7 out of 10 currently. I would believe that, probably never. So that was pretty entertaining.
Rick, is this just Mayweather keeping himself in the headlines?
Yeah, Mayweather could be really training for MMA, but it's being used to, in a fake promotional way to keep his name in the conversation. We're talking about him right now. And so that's nice, but there's nothing really else to this story. I don't think he'll ever step foot in the octagon. You can quote me on that, marked for history. I know he just told TMZ he's applying for an MMA license, but beyond that, this will never happen. He's an undefeated 41-year-old boxer who's trying to become a entrepreneur. He is in some ways, you know, he owns some strip clubs, but his recent talks of buying the Newcastle United English Premier Soccer League. I think, did I say that right? Or is it the team? I know nothing about soccer, but I just saw that online today. Mayweather's interested in that, and he's, you know, looking into other business ventures. But the one thing I think Mayweather has above anything else is his name and his name value. And we're talking about right now, so that's just elevating his name value. And I know he took the fight with Conor McGregor, and there was that was a risky proposition, but not nearly as dangerous and as risky as stepping foot in the egg-sided cage. And if he gets destroyed, I can see that hurting his name value and possibly hurting his entrepreneurship.
Yeah, some people want to say that Mayweather entering into the octagon would be like this abomination. Like, really, that's where you're going to draw the line at abomination, when an undefeated boxer would step into mixed martial arts? And that's hardly the biggest concession that the UFC or Dana White would have ever made. With that said, I'm in total agreement with you, Rick. I just don't see that ever happening. And it doesn't even make sense, you know, from a completely pragmatic standpoint. Like, why would you get involved in this endeavor that could cause you serious injury when you, in all likelihood, can basically rest on your laurels for the rest of your life? Like, why would you do such a thing? It's not exactly like he's the most adventurous guy, as we've seen in his fight career. He's very calculated in what he does and when he competes. I think all this is just further proof that Floyd Mayweather is going to be a part of the future of MMA. I think Floyd Mayweather and the UFC have a long and fruitful partnership with each other in the future. Just like a couple months ago with, oh, what's going on with Dana White's going to talk to Floyd Mayweather. Well, he wanted to ask him advice on boxing promoting. And I think that's something that's still in the pike. So I think those are two entities that are going to be joined together for a while, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to fight. Doesn't mean he's going to fight CM Punk, as much as I would love to see that happen. Doesn't mean he's going to fight Nick Newell, even as cool as that would probably be. You talk about making a baby face in one corner. Holy crap. Would anybody be rooting for Mayweather in that
my
fight? Sean, what do you think? Is there a business relationship? Is that really where this is headed?
Yeah, probably. I mean, if it's anything, it's probably going to be something to that effect. You know, I can't imagine that Floyd Mayweather is going to be a competitor at any given time. So, yeah, it's probably something to do with you know, a business partnership, some kind of back scratching thing. I don't know.
Guys, let's go to another break. Go ahead. You got something to add there, Rick?
Yeah, I just, you know, Mayweather has a promotional, you know, I don't know if it's in, you know, he works with Showtime and everything, but I know there's Mayweather Promotions. It would be interesting if he was able to somehow get a deal with Dana White and Showtime, where a lot of these, Showtime cards where they just show the two main fights, the prelims could be shown on Fight Pass or something. Like, I know that Dana wants to get boxing and going, and you know, one thing boxing doesn't do is you don't sit and watch Showtime and watch a 7-hour show. I don't even know half the time where to watch the prelims. So if he can work with Floyd Mayweather and Showtime in that way, that could be something just added to the long list of things that are on Fight Pass that nobody but me watches.
Well, and then you could answer this. There was a boxing fight on Fight Pass recently, wasn't there?
Yeah. There was. It was Roy Jones Jr. in his final retirement fight in Florida. And, the production value for that was not that good. But it was interesting to watch and everything. So, yeah.
Okay, guys, let's go to a break really quickly. And when we come back on the other side, let's talk about a potential super fight between Conor McGregor and Dana White. I'll let you know more at the other side.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, guys, let's talk about something that's a little fun here. This week we had a debut in the UFC. It would be one Mr. Dana White in the UFC 3 video game. He is now a playable character. And surprise, surprise, he's apparently a very good mixed martial artist, according to this video game. Jeremy Cruz from MMA Fighting tweeted out by noting that when you look at Dana White's light heavyweight credentials, his striking is better than Daniel Cormier's, his grappling is better than Anderson Silva's, his stamina is just as good as Lyoto Machida's, that's a shoot, and his health is better than 9X champions. First off, guys, what do you think about Dana White putting himself in a video game, Rick? Okay, I guess Rick has stepped aside a little bit to get some work done.
I'm back. Sorry about that. I had the music started playing.
Did you hear the question, though?
I think it's kind of funny that Dana White – yeah, I heard it. I was on mute. I think it's funny that Dana White's in the game. I just think that he should be beatable. You know, he's just a ham in there like a tomato can. Just throw him in and don't make him one of the best in the world. He's not the GOAT.
Sean, what was your reaction when you saw this?
I just thought it was funny. I mean, you know, it's I especially thought it was funny with the backlash. I thought that was pretty hilarious. People were getting so upset about it. I mean, it's, you know, the McMahons have been in games for forever, you know, however many years now. And Dana White being in the game is nothing, you know, nothing out of the ordinary. I mean, the stats are a little bit ridiculous, but that's it's kind of what makes it a little bit funny. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily bother me, although it would be more – see, the thing is, it would be more fun if he was in there, like you said, as a can, and you could just beat the crap out of him. You know, no one wants to put Dana White in there to potentially lose to him.
Yeah, and
– is he like the ending boss? Did you see his six-pack?
Yeah.
He's great, like, but I wish there was, like, multiple versions of him. Like, in some of the old WWE video games, you'd get, like, 80s Hogan and then NWO Hogan and then, like – Hollywood 2002 era Hogan. I want all the different versions of Dana White. I want, like, skinny just buying the UFC Dana White. I want, like, bombastic mid-2000s Dana White in his Affliction shirt throwing out, you know, epithets and all that. And then I want, like sad, beaten down Dana White of right now, who would just be, like, really slow and hand you pictures of Conor McGregor. I think all those would be great additions to the game. But, now, normally, guys, we play around a
Did you notice?
Go ahead.
Did you notice he looks like Glover Texara in the game at all? Am I the only one?
Well, I mean,
that?
He's a bald, light-skinned dude. That's... But speaking of bald, light-skinned dudes, how is Rogan not in here? He would be a great character that I'm sure people would love.
That's a good one.
To take out their aggression on here. But guys, we normally play Fact or Fiction right here, but we're just gonna have a one question Fact or Fiction here. It's gonna relate to this. So, Sean, Fact or Fiction?
Yes.
Video game Dana White can beat video game Vince McMahon. Fact or Fiction?
I'm gonna say fact, because they don't pump up Vince McMahon's stats quite as much as they pump up Dana's. Now, that's saying something.
Okay, same question, Rick.
Fact. Yeah, total agreement. I think that Dana White right now, how he is going to – he can beat Daniel Cormier and Stipe Miocic at the same time.
I really want Tito Ortiz to get added to one of these games so we can finally get that, you know, super fight that we were promised all those years ago that can finally play out in the world of EA Sports. Okay, guys, let's go to another break. Hopefully I'll press the right button this time. And we'll get into some WWE topics, specifically Brock Lesnar and Ronda Rousey.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Three cheers for me. I pressed the right button this time. Let's talk about Ronda Rousey, though, guys.
Nice.
A week ago, we signed off on this show thinking we would have a lot to talk about with Rousey being on Raw. But she wasn't on Raw, and in fact, the press release or the web article on WWE.com advertising she would be at every Raw until WrestleMania has been amended, and as of right now, she's only advertised for the Go Home show in a couple of weeks. Now, this doesn't seem to be any grand scheme. Ryan Satin, a pro wrestling sheet, reported that it was actually, from his sources, a scheduling conflict within WWE for some of her medicals to be completed at the same time of Monday Night Raw. And the creative team apparently has taken advantage of the fact that, well, they had a pretty good segment 2 weeks ago, that maybe they don't need to have her on Raw. With that said, is this going to serve her well to be advertised and to be someone who her on-screen character has said that she wants no special treatment, to suddenly being exactly in the role of a Brock Lesnar or The Rock from a couple years ago? Is this going to help or hurt her, Sean?
I don't think it's going to hurt her. I think she's kind of in her own boat as far as this thing goes. The thing is that with the Lesnar angle, I don't think it's working very well. it's not going to serve the purpose they want it to serve, which is Roman Reigns getting cheered, which is never, ever going to happen unless they turn him heel. But with Ronda, I think people are going to react the way they're going to react to her. And honestly, it was misguided to have her on every show between now and Mania anyway, because what are you going to do with her that with that many appearances? I don't think that there was any good way to use her that often leading up to her first match. So it's probably a good thing that she's not going to be on these shows. But it was just a mistake, obviously, to advertise her. So I think the heat is not going to be on her. It's going to be more on the promotion for bungling this.
What do you think, Rick? Is this gonna hinder how she's perceived by the hardcore audience?
Yeah, I don't think it helps her at all with the hardcore audience. Besides the fact, like Sean was saying, if she just comes back week to week, we get used to her and she gives some lackluster performances. Not saying that they have been, just you grow used to her after a while. But I think the casual fans who are tuning into Mania will be happy to see her. But this might create a little bit more of a divide and a smattering of a little bit more boos when she actually goes out there for the tag match. And I believe she was on Ellen. That was part of the scheduling conflict as well for Raw, was she was on Ellen 6 days ago. And so maybe WWE was okay with that so she can promote, WrestleMania. But, we'll see.
Yeah, if anything, we know that WWE is definitely okay with mainstream media appearances being associated with them. That's definitely their thing. I will say this. I do like that the social media angle that they're taking with this, where they're tweeting out these photos of her and Kurt Angle training together. That looks cool. I think that's a good way to sell this fight and to do things. I'm not going to go on a whole Wade Keller rant on how pro wrestlers should behave on social media, but I think that is a case of using social media very, very well. Now, Sean, you talked about the Brock Lesnar angle, where even on their Twitter account earlier today, WWE is basically teasing the fact that he might not be there. Will Brock show? I agree with you that it's not going to accomplish their explicit goal. But what do you think, as a promotional strategy in general, taking Roman Reigns out of the equation, is that a good tactic for a promotion to take to tease the fact that they might have no shows?
It's so hard to know because their objective is just so misguided here. They're not going to do what they want to do. They're not going to be able to get Roman Reigns cheered over Brock Lesnar. It's just not going to happen. So, like, anything that they put, any effort that they put into getting that end result just seems like wasted effort. So it's so hard to grade what they're going to, what they're doing, knowing their desired end result. You know what I mean? I don't think it's a great idea, especially the way that they have him act before he goes off the screen. And again, Wade kind of ranted about that last week with him brushing off Renee Young and all that kind of stuff. He just acts like a jerk, and then we're supposed to cheer him for some reason. I don't know, man. I think, honestly, they may be better off having him off the TV if they end up actually doing that. They may end up better off having him off the show so that the booze don't gain momentum heading into WrestleMania.
And I don't view this. Some people have viewed this. Are they trying to smear Brock on the way out and for his UFC run? I just think they're mainstreaming the ideas that the hardcore fans already had about Brock Lesnar. They're just bringing those to the forefront. I don't think it's going to change. I don't think suddenly, it's not like he was ever embraced in mixed martial arts to begin with. So whenever he gets sent off, in a rematch from WrestleMania 20, where he gets sent off in a chorus of boos, it's not like he was ever lovingly embraced in the MMA community. That doesn't mean he wasn't a big star and would still be a big star. But I don't think that will have any impact on him at all. Rick, what are your thoughts?
No.
No, it's funny. I think we talked about this a week or two, Robert. It's like, yeah, they can bury him on WWE TV on his way out, or they can just keep going with him after Mania and he still has this part-time schedule. But it's funny just to watch Brock Lesnar not care. You know, either way, like, the fans can boo him, the fans can cheer him. It doesn't really matter. Oh, you're going to tell me that I need to go in there and have a 14-second match with Kane? Okay. He does whatever he says. WWE tells him to have these short matches or no show, and that's their prerogative, and he'll just do it, and he just does not care. He cares about the dollar signs that he's getting them right now, and I personally don't really care as much as I thought I would, because it's just kind of fun to watch Vince McMahon try to pull one over on the quote-unquote smart fans, and then everybody just smiling and nodding or smiling and shaking their head because it's not working, really, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's funny. With all this stuff that they try to do to break down the fourth wall to appeal to those fans, the most over thing they've done in the last year is have some big strong guy turn over a car, and that's what's got the hardcore fans invested. None of this meta shoot stuff has done any of that, and then the most old school of pro wrestling angles is still what gets people. I just think that's amazing. One more thing on this, though. You talked about the whole Brock Lesnar doesn't care factor. Do you think he's at all concerned about this? I know we say he doesn't care, but do you think he is concerned about what his image could be going into MMA, or is it just Brock being Brock? Rick?
I think it's Brock being Brock. Like you mentioned, the WrestleMania 20 performance when he was going against Goldberg, like, he was getting resounding boos at MSG. He just gave the crowd the finger. Yeah, he didn't care. I mean, sure, he wasn't going to go right into UFC. He was planning on doing football. But he's as marketable as ever, you know. And when he was in UFC and he didn't feel like he was getting paid right, he made an announcement like he's going to go drink the different brand of beer and everything like that. I'm sure he thinks about what he does and the repercussions down the road. But he's been proven to be a marketable force that no matter, what he really does, people will watch. He brings eyeballs to the screen.
And one last thing on this, Sean. Francis Ngannou today making some noise that's still his dream opponent is Brock Lesnar. Is that the next fight we're going to see with Brock Lesnar involved?
I'd be okay with that. I mean, it would be interesting at least. I mean, the consensus out there is that you put Brock Lesnar in there with a power puncher, he's going to get flattened. But if you put him in there with a power puncher who has no gas tank and
you know, Lesnar can take him down. Hey, that's a variable, man. I'd be interested to see it.
Yeah, it's a good stylistic matchup. The same way Mark Hunt was a good stylistic matchup against him. The same way Stipe Miocic, that was the game plan that he executed so greatly against Ngannou, where it was just basically let me get out the way and not let you punch me and let you get tired. Brock Lesnar, no matter what he's put into his body, has an amazing gas tank. Even if he only wrestled 14-minute matches, for a guy that size, for a heavyweight, we compare his win to a guy like an AJ Styles sometimes in pro wrestling. But when you compare that to someone of similar size, it's just not comparable. Would you think we get Ngannou and Lesnar in the UFC at some point, Rick?
I hope so, but I think Stipe was able to survive a round one that Brock Lesnar would not be able to. So if Stipe is able to bull rush Brock, I think he closes it pretty quickly, and then Brock won't be able to take the game plan that Stipe did by taking him down and wearing him out. I just, you know, Stipe took a beating in that first round. I do want to see that fight, though. That would be pretty exciting. I just hope it doesn't come as the same result as Mark Hunt's fight with Brock did, where it was okay.
I am heading into WrestleMania season. I remember the last time we were doing this at WrestleMania 31, I was kind of bummed out that I felt like Brock Lesnar wasn't going to be around. And I am in that camp that I like Brock Lesnar and I like him around pro wrestling. At the same time, though, maybe now because we're doing this show now and everything else that's gone on in MMA, I am so looking forward to Brock time in MMA again. I'm looking forward to all that. I'm looking forward to the anger of the MMA community with every little thing that he does and his obliviousness just being on full display in the MMA world. Where, you know, where they just have no love for the guy, but he's such a massive star there. I'm looking forward to all that in the upcoming months. I do want him to remain in pro wrestling, but I would be lying if I said I wasn't looking forward to what we have on the horizon next year in MMA. Sean, I think that'll do us for this week. Where can people find you if they want to get in touch with you?
You can mostly find me on Twitter. My handle there is at Sean Ennis. That's SHAWNENNIS. Not a ton going on right now. My timeline's pretty quiet, but you can hit me up and we can chat anytime.
You haven't been all in on all the wheeling and dealing that the Eagles are doing?
Well, I watch and I observe from afar, and I nod approvingly, but I haven't been saying too much.
That's very ominous of you, Sean. Rick, what, you got anything to plug?
Looking forward to writing a column down the road, but otherwise I appreciate you guys having me on your show. Apologies for one or two technical difficulties, but love being a part of the gig.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Rob M. Vallejos, RobMVallejos. Follow the brand at MMA Torch. Go to MMATorch.com. Follow all the PW Torch community of websites, PW Podcast, PW Torch, PW Torch Livecast. Hear all the shows like this and the other live ones all week. And of course, go VIP. That is this is the prime time of year to go VIP to see what was going on in past years this time. Or maybe, hey, Thunder, as we have noted several times on the show, just got added to the network. What a time to go back and see what Wade and Bruce and those guys were saying about the high art that was Thunder back in the late 90s. So go check all that out. And Rick can hardly contain his excitement, as you can tell on the other end. So we're going to sign off. I think Sean and I will go watch Raw. Rick's going to head on over and watch Thunder. But let you hear something about some VIP, and we will talk to you next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Progress Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.